are listening to WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. Hello to you today from the warm heart of a down-home gal somewhere in the warm heart of America. This is Prepare for Freedom Show number 25, coming to you live each Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. Central Time on WQ4D Radio, the Inspiring Friends Network. You can find us online at www.prepareforfreedom.com. and on Facebook at www.facebook.com/prepareforfreedom. My name is Sharon, and I'm your host for today's show. Let me now introduce you to my co-host and official Two Cents producer, Billy Bob.
Well, hello there, everybody. You know, this is our third show, and it's always been cloudy. Maybe that's a good omen. But that's okay. It's going to be still a beautiful, wonderful day. And since it's our 25th silver anniversary show, yay! I'm proud of us. I really am.
Billy Bob's got a big smile on his face, and I understand why. And, yes, we do have a great show for you today, and we will get to it in just a moment. Just want to make a note. We're talking about common sense here, common sense preparedness. And so, after you've listened to the show today, if you like it and you have any common sense, please share it with your friends. And on to the topic of today's show, which is what, Billy Bob?
Food storage and common sense.
Well, one out of two is not bad.
Well, I had to come up with something. It wouldn't be a show without me coming up with half of it right.
Okay, and I'll give the other half.
Right, there you go.
Okay, Billy Bob got the common sense, and I've got the survival, and we have got you covered today. And we have a unusual but very interesting guest on our show today. He made it just under the wire. That happens. We know how that is, and we hope to have him on shortly. And let me just tell you a little bit about our guest today. His name is Leon Pantenberg. And I have known of him, been acquainted with him for a little while. He's a freelance journalist, a photographer, and wilderness enthusiast who doesn't claim to be a so-called survival expert or a survivalist. Rather, he teaches a simple, common sense way of surviving that the average person living in the city, the suburbs, the country, or wherever can use to keep an unforeseen situation from turning into a life-threatening disaster. In addition, he works with the Boy Scouts in his area as a wilderness trainer. Now, why does Leon do this? Because when he was working out as a newspaper man and journalist for 3 decades, covering search and rescue, sheriff's departments, floods, forest fires, and other natural disasters and outdoor emergencies, Leon discovered that many people died unnecessarily when simple common sense might have changed the outcome. Now, Leon is quite an adventurous guy. His wilderness backpacking experience includes extended solos through Yellowstone's backcountry, hiking the John Muir Trail in California, and numerous shorter trips along the Pacific Crest Trail. Other mountain backpacking trips include hikes through the Uintas in Utah, the Beartooths in Montana, the Sawtooths in Ohio, the Priors, the Wind River Range, the Tetons and Bighorns in Wyoming, Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado, the Catskills in New York, and Death Valley National Monument in Southern California. That just about covers north, south, east, and west, I think. Ah, but wait, there's more. There is more. Don't give me that look, Billy Bob. There is more.
Oh, bring it to us.
I will. Leon has taken canoe trips, and you'll be interested to hear some of these canoe trips, Billy Bob. He's taken canoe trips through the Okefenokee Swamp,
Hey, I know where that's
at. We're getting close to home. Right.
Yeah.
And the National Wildlife Refuge in, say it, Billy Bob. What state?
What state what?
Okefenokee Swamp and National Wildlife Refuge.
Oh, that's Georgia.
Right.
See, I had to make everybody think about that.
You're right. Georgia Bulldogs forever, right?
Right.
Okay. But, in addition, he has canoed the Big Black River Swamp in Mississippi. Yay.
Yay.
And the Boundary Waters Canoe Area in northern Minnesota. And numerous small river trips in the Midwest and Pacific Northwest. Leon is also an avid fisherman and an elk, deer, upland game, and waterfowl hunter. Now, just a few other fun things about Leon before we bring him on. He has a second-degree black belt in Taekwondo. Don't mess with him. He is an enthusiastic bluegrass mandolin picker and fiddler and a two-time finalist in the International Dutch Oven Society's World Championships.
Dutch oven? Ooh.
Oh, yeah.
That's very impressive.
I understand he's a pretty mean Dutch oven cook. Hopefully we'll get a chance to ask him today. Now, assuming he's still sitting on his chair...
He's
and
still here.
Rolling on the floor with laughter, we're going to bring him on the show. Leon, are you there?
I'm here. I tell you what, with this intro, how could I not be here? My gosh, I'd sit and listen to the show myself. You folks are so wonderful to me.
Oh, well, you'd have a little fun with it, just having, you know, breaking the ice a little.
Yeah, well, I just want to say one thing, and that's, well, I do appreciate your intro, Sharon. The Sawtooths are not in Ohio. They are in Idaho.
Oh, I mispronounced it.
That's okay. We all make mistakes.
You bet.
Well, you know, I was low on my mistakes for this week, so I think I'm up to my quota now.
Okay. Well, one a week is about right, isn't it?
Right.
I don't know about that. Sometimes I make more than that.
Well, we are delighted to have you here, Leon, and thank you for making the correction in your introduction. Yes, sawtooth.
This is going to be a fun show, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I tell you what, we'd have heard about it at some point. I can guarantee you that.
Well, you know what got me distracted, actually, come to think of it? I was reading that, and this, you know, I had this sense of humor, and as we were talking about the different tooth mountains, I said, boy, this is a very toothy subject, and then that's about when the mistake happened.
Well, you should hear when I get a little tongue twied on here like that. So, you know, we have fun.
We have fun, and I hope we've got a subject today that will not only be fun and interesting to discuss, but maybe might even get some people doing some common sense things in a fun way, because what the world needs now is definitely more common sense.
Oh, sweet love.
Common sense. And you've got a variety of common sense that I felt was especially important for us to hear about today.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
So you've been to Georgia in the Okefenokee Swamp, huh?
I have been there, yes, indeed. I thought it was an incredibly beautiful area. Are you familiar with that area there, Billy Bob?
Yes, I am. I lived in Georgia for 36 years, and I was only 25 miles away from it.
Oh, what a beautiful part of the country. Now, that is gorgeous. Georgia is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, I was down there when that fire started a couple years ago, when Okefenokee was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we had a lot of smoke.
Oh, I bet you did.
But thank you for the compliment of Georgia being some of the beautiful country, which it is down there. Mississippi is, too.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. The whole South is beautiful. In fact, it's hard to find a part of this country that isn't beautiful, as far as I'm concerned, because everything has its own little uniqueness to it. And where I live right now, which is in the high desert, we are the opposite of a swamp. We have about 10 inches of rain every year, and... I totally enjoy desert hiking and hanging out there where it doesn't rain.
Well, yeah. Well, I got a good little question for you, and this is going to really be interesting because I'm going to have a little fun with it in a way, because I kind of like the question in a lot of ways.
Okay.
People talk about common sense. So what is the difference between regular common sense, survival, and this show, they got Survival Series on TV?
I figured that would get a laugh.
Oh, goodness. Okay, which show are you talking about?
Any of them.
Any of them. Oh, goodness.
Pick whatever one you want.
You know, I get that a lot. And in a way, these shows have been good for my website, Survival Common Sense, because people are looking at some of these shows and kind of going, what? How does this work out? You know, that sort of thing. The thing most people need to think of when they're watching these shows is that, one, they're TV shows. And one of the reasons that producers love reality TV shows is because they are cheap to produce. What you do is you take somebody out somewhere and drop them off in the woods and you kind of watch them wander around. And they are writing the script as they go. So you don't have to have an elaborate crew. You take along the cameraman, and these folks kind of do whatever comes naturally to them. So it's an easy way to produce a show. Now, some of these folks like, excuse me?
That ain't like, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's not like really surviving, really, is it?
No, it's not, because it's a television show, and these folks have backup crews. And you know, you'll find people like Bear Grylls, where he typically sleeps in a nice hotel every night, and we don't really know how much of the actual survival experience these folks are going through. And I would have to say, based on having been out there in nasty weather and such, I don't think they do a lot. I think that much of it is staged for the TV, and I think a lot of it, many of the techniques they teach are just not safe. Very, very difficult to watch some of those for me, because I'm a Boy Scout leader, and a lot of the stuff they do, we teach the kids not to.
Now, that makes common sense. Because, you know, if you're going to go out, you said you're a Boy Scout leader.
Yes,
so
I am.
So when you go out on camping and everything, do you not, what's your motto? Be prepared.
It is. And one of the things we teach is the whole common sense approach to stuff that you don't see on some of these shows. And that's because if you're using common sense survival techniques, it's pretty boring. You're not going to be doing having these very dangerous stunts going on. You're not going to be doing things that seem pretty dumb. And you will be using your head as opposed to trying to figure out some way to make the camera angle look good or some way to keep the show going.
Now, that's very impressive there. I mean, I could figure some of that out, but I didn't think they would go that far with it. But when you go out on camping and everything, especially when you go out in the wild and nature mm-hmm. and everything like that, and you know where you're going, do you not get enough survival thing to bring along with you that people should think about, have common sense to bring with them just in case they get stranded out there or lost?
I'll take that a step further, because I don't go out of my house without a survival kit on me. And that's if you take a look on my website, you'll see I've recently started selling the Keychain survival kits and also the Altoids Type 10 kits. And that's because I've been carrying these tools with me for years, and people have said, well, how do I get some of those? And I would give them a list of ingredients, if you will, and they would say, well, I'm not finding the same stuff you are. And I'm saying, well, I'm sorry, but here's the list. You do the best you can. But one of the things people don't realize, and they don't think about it until it happens to them, is that a survival situation can occur at any instant. And where I live here in Oregon, we are ranked number 3 or 4 in the nation on as far as danger of earthquakes. So I could be sitting here talking to you. We could have the big one off the Cascadia Fault off the coast of Oregon kick in, and all of a sudden I'm going to see pictures falling off the walls, and my house will be falling down around me, literally, and I got to run for the door. And I won't have time probably to pick up anything. So I have gear I carry on me at all times, as I have right now, and you just have to be ready and have to realize that, yes, you could have a natural disaster or you could have a survival situation occur. It's not out of the realm of possibility by any means.
Yes, I hope to have time a little bit later in the show for you to talk more about this little Altoid kit and what you do with your keychain, because I found that was absolutely fascinating.
I was just reading about it. I like it.
Yes, before it's we
cool.
get there, though,
uh-huh.
Just Leon, so you understand, the people that listen to this show, as far as we mm-hmm. know, you're talking about bare bones beginners. We just
mm-hmm.
introduced the concept of being prepared to them a few shows
mm-hmm.
ago. It's not that mm-hmm. they don't necessarily know what it means to be prepared,
but
are people that you might say just average folks. They live in the city, they live in the country, they live in the suburbs. They're just used to their normal lives. They have their technology mm-hmm. tools. They have their life
sure.
to live, and they want to be free. They value their freedom.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't yet understand, and we're helping them to understand that being properly prepared and just having some common sense, especially when it comes to survival, may mean the difference between life and death as well as their freedom. You know, just so you kind of have an idea. And with that, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you need to think about this for a second, it's okay. But let's just say that you're talking to me. I've never heard about preparedness or surviving or anything. I'm about a fifth grader or maybe a young Boy Scout or just new in the Scouts. Whatever it is, I really don't know much.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to try and teach me five things or pick five things, the most important survival skills that me or the other young person growing up should know, what would they be?
Oh, goodness. Okay, you're going to put me on the spot right out of the chute here. Well, you're going to have to keep track of this for me then, because I get a lot of questions similar to that. And so let's say the first thing you need to know is that there is a possibility you could be involved in some sort of a disaster during your life. And that could be anything from a car wreck to going out for a walk and getting lost, or having the worst-case scenario, which would be, say, an earthquake or a tornado come through your area. And so the first thing you need to know is that it can happen to you. And there's a lot of studies regarding how people deal with emergencies, and probably the first thing I would be recommend a book called The Unthinkable by Amanda Ripley. And she is a journalist and did a study of how people react during emergencies. It's very fascinating reading. And then there's another book that's excellent called Deep Survival. And there's another book that is the granddaddy of them all called Survival Psychology by Dr. John Leach. And what Dr. Leach studied was how people react in emergencies. And this is something that everybody needs to integrate into their thinking right off the bat. In any emergency, Dr. Leach found, about 80% of the people involved will not have a clue what to do. They will probably stand around frozen in disbelief, which is a common reaction. And you'll see them walking around after disasters and such, and they're going to be kind of looking for someone to tell them what to do. Of that group, another 10% will do the wrong thing. They will have watched one of these TV reality shows, or they will have gotten some information from somewhere, and for some reason it'll stick in their mind. And they will think that that's what they're supposed to do. And it could be totally unrealistic, or it could be totally inappropriate. And the only people out of this whole bunch, of this whole crowd, will be 10 to 15% who've had some training, either in the Boy Scouts or Outward Bound or some other program like that. And they're the ones who are going to survive. So the first thing you have to do is convince yourself that I want to be of the 10% that survives. And once you have convinced yourself that you could indeed have an emergency happen to you, that I need to be prepared for that, that's your first step. And you have overcome a huge hurdle in your survival. Now, your question was, what are the five things I would recommend to do?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Five skills, most important skills.
Five skills, okay. Well, the first skill you need is in your mind. That's develop a survival mindset.
Amen to that. Thank you.
Yes. What you've got to do, and it requires no survival skills at all to understand that you have to take responsibility for yourself. And those of you who are out there listening to this because you're attracted to the title of the show, you can't be free if you have to depend on somebody else. You have to step forward and say, I am going to take care of myself and my family, and here is how I'm going to do it, and here's some skills I need. The first one is your mindset. You have to accept the fact that life could change radically in an instant. The second thing you need to think about is, and the second skill you probably need is, what will I do to prepare myself? How will I learn? So you have to have an open mind, and you have to start thinking about, okay, realistically speaking, I live here in the city. I live in an apartment. I don't know anything. Can I accept that I don't know anything and that I am ignorant and that I need to go out and look for a teacher or a mentor or someone who can give me the correct information? And so the next skill you'd probably need would be, what would you call it, a willingness to be educated and the willingness to accept that I need to prepare for things. Then the next skill, we could start talking about a lot of things at this point, but you have to have these first two. The next skill might be preparedness. It might be, okay, I've accepted the fact that I may have a problem. I may have an emergency develop. I've accepted the fact that I don't know anything. The next thing I need to do is take steps to educate yourself. And so the next skill might be looking at your skill set. You may say, I've never been camping, or I'm pretty good at camping, but I'm not very good at fire making, or I'm not, I don't know how to make shelters very well. So you may look at those and say, you know, of these skills that I need to learn, I need to work most on, and then fill in the blank. And then from there, find an expert. It could be something like, off-grid cooking, because I have a website also called Off-Grid Cooking. And one of the things people were asking me was, okay, I have all this storage food. Now, what do I do with it? How do I cook it, especially if the electricity goes off, or especially if we have a tornado like they did in Joplin? They shut off the electricity. They shut off the gas. I can't use my gas grill, which I was depending on, and I have to essentially get down to making a fire and being able to cook food. So I would say the ability to cook food, and that's tied in with the ability to make a fire. So those are two skills that would probably tie in for number three on my list. And those are the type of things that you can learn in a variety of ways. Talking about fire making to start with, go to a good, reputable website such as, if I may say, survivalcommonsense.com. I'll show you some methods for making fires with some very common tools that you probably have right now, and you probably don't know that they're that effective. The other is, if you live in an area that has a Dutch oven club, go join it. Because if you are a member of the International Dutch Oven Society, they teach off-grid cooking, essentially. They tell you it's Dutch oven cooking and that you'll use it around the campfire. But it is off-grid cooking, and that is going to do a world of good things for you. In Joplin, Missouri, for example, I assume the people who woke up the day after that tornado hit were, well, I probably never went to sleep, but the people who were in the aftermath, among the things that they had challenges with was probably finding drinking water, because there is all sorts of problems in the aftermath of a disaster such as that, and so you need to be able to purify water. This ties in with your ability to make a fire. This ties in with your ability to do off-grid cooking. So, for example, if I walked outside and faced the horrible reality of Joplin, because I have a Dutch oven, because I can start a fire, and because I can find water somewhere, I can boil water, I can purify that, I can do one thing to help make my situation better. And you never know, you may be in a situation such as in the aftermath of these massive disasters where you have to purify water for a lot of people. So, boy, I'm having a hard time coming up with what skill's most important.
Well, you got four there. If you count the water, that's number four.
Okay, well, then let's call number five shelter, because there are, and you can read any of these survival manuals, and they'll say that you need to worry about food, water, shelter, and fire, and those are your most important things. I don't know. It depends on what your situation was. But for shelter, I can tell you this. if your body temperature varies very much from 98.6 degrees, which is normal temperature for most people, you are in a world of hurt. By the time your core temperature drops to 96, just 2 degrees, you are going to be shivering, experiencing all sorts of horrible things associated with hypothermia, which is being too cold. At the other extreme is if you get too warm, if your temperature gets to 100 degrees or 101 or 102, that's very bad for you too. So among the things you can do to help your shelter is to start by learning how to just rig a simple tarp shelter. And it's not hard. It's very, very, very basic common sense survival. And it's one of those things you can use in a variety of places. If you are in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina or something along those lines, you need to get out of the sun so that can make a shade. Your tarp can also be used to keep you out of the rain, which is very important if you're somewhere and your house is blown down and you're catching the thunderstorm afterward. And also, if you get into a very deep snow situation, a tarp is frequently a more effective shelter than a tent or something along those lines. So I think we've hit five, right?
Yes, we have hit five, and you have done very, very well. You know what I think I'm going to do is we're going to go ahead and call an early break.
Okay.
And take our break because we're at a really good stopping point, and then after our break, we'll come back, and Billy Bob's got another fun question for you. So
okay.
Sit back.
Beware.
Relax. Catch your breath, and be ready for Billy Bob and me after the break. It's great to have you on, Leon, and we will be right back.
WQ4D Radio enters 2012 with four diverse and entertaining shows on the Inspiring Friends Network. Never Say Impossible with your host, Myra Goldick, features guests who will inspire, motivate, and teach you innovative ways to breathe new life into your business. Old Men's Stories is hosted by master storyteller Roland Willits, whose goal is to show you that you are already a master storyteller, that your stories and your unique experience, your life's journey, are amazing and more than worth retelling. WQ4D Radio also features Prepare for Freedom, hosted by Sharon Izzy. Enjoy fun and informative weekly podcasts designed to entertain, motivate, and inspire you to take positive action towards achieving personal, emotional, economic, and spiritual freedom for yourself, your loved ones, and the country in which you live. Inspired by Bigfoot takes a look at the controversial phenomenon known as Bigfoot. Each week, guests, questions, and comments about one of the most fascinating subjects today. With your host, Bill Lee. Inspired by Bigfoot, Prepare for Freedom, Old Men's Stories, and Never Say Impossible. Check them out at WQ4D Radio on the Inspiring Friends Network.
We are back with the second half of Prepare for Freedom, and we have a very special and interesting guest this hour. His name is Leon Pantenberg. He is the webmaster and author of SurvivalCommonSense.com, a website we very highly recommend you visit. And speaking of that website, Billy Bob is ready to go with a question.
Oh, always. How y'all been? I miss y'all, but I'm back. Hey, I got a good question for you. And I mean, I actually was doing a little bit of thinking over here while you were talking before. So I'm going to kind of rearrange this question in a way.
Okay.
You know, you talked about fire and everything, about certain things to have to build a fire and all like that, which I want you to explain that. But also I want to explain, how can some of the things that you have on your website for people to actually get started with, to learn how to be get a survival kit and be prepared a little bit of how to cook outdoors and stuff like that if you have a natural disaster, and building fires.
Mm-hmm.
So what pages that Leon would recommend? Is that what you're saying? Okay.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, how to get started with it.
Sure. On my website, on the left-hand side, there's several categories. Well, there's about 15 categories. If you are interested in learning about how to make a fire, there is a post called Make a Fire. If you're interested in survival shelters, there's emergency shelter, and there's survival equipment. And on the survival equipment page, I test survival equipment. I'm testing a stove right now out in my backyard. And people ask me about specific brands and such, and what I do then is I get a hold of one of the products and I test it myself. And if I won't use it, I won't help sell it. So anything you see on my site is something that I have either used or has come highly recommended to me by a source I respect very much. So one of the things that people need to start with, as we mentioned in the show before, is realizing that you don't know anything, and let's start from ground zero. So if you want to learn how to make a fire, for example, I would suggest you go to the Make a Fire post, which I'm doing right now, and you'll find all sorts of things, including a video I did a couple weeks ago during a snowstorm called How to Find Dry Tinder in Wet Weather. And some of these skills, obviously, if you live in Georgia, Billy Bob, you're not going to see a whole lot of snow, but you never know.
We see a little bit now and then now, but not much, but like you said. But we get a lot of rain and sometimes.
Even a cold rain try to find dry timber, right?
Oh, there you go. I mean, in Mississippi, where I used to live, I would go out. I've never been so cold as I have been in Mississippi and Louisiana. I lived in the Midwest for all my life. And one of the things that some of the common skills you have to learn as far as making a fire are just where do I look to find dry tinder in wet weather? And this is a skill that is universal because where I live here in the Pacific Northwest, last week, for example, I was out where there was 8 feet of snow. The next weekend after that, I was out in the desert where there was no snow. But how to find dry tinder in wet circumstances or in any circumstances is a vital skill. And if you can know how to do that, then you have made a huge step in preparing yourself for building fires under survival circumstances.
Now, what would you recommend to lighten some of these fires? I've been reading your website a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some nice things, and I'd like you to tell the people what they could use to light the fire with.
Especially a beginner, you know.
Like a beginner.
A beginner, okay. Here's what I would do. I would go into your bathroom and get out. I'm sure most people have cotton balls and most people have petroleum jelly of some sort, probably Vaseline or something like that. Combine those two, and you have a very effective method of fire making. I did another video on that last week where I started a fire in the snow during a snowstorm using that particular method. And one of the things that you have to think about, and one of the hallmarks of survival common sense, is you don't have to go out and buy a bunch of expensive equipment to have an effective survival kit. And I always recommend, now I sell survival kits, but I always recommend people buy their own. Or make their own, I mean, because I don't know what your skills are and you don't know what mine are. And if I sell you a kit, is there the potential that you can't use it because of your skill level? I mean, I don't know. So you'd have to find that out. The other thing would be your survival kit needs to be fitted to your area. For example, I don't think you're going to need my snowshoes, Billy Bob, and you're probably not going to need my snow shovel when you go out deer hunting. Now,
that's correct.
That's correct. On the other hand, I might need some rain gear in your area, and I might need some mosquito repellent, and there's a pretty good chance that I might need some sort of way to deal with snakes. Now, I'm not saying use one of those kits where you know, if you get bit, you cut with a razor blade and all that sort of stuff. That's very
right.
Dangerous.
Bring a snake kit with you.
Yeah. Yeah, but you have to understand that my survival challenges are not the same as yours, and so if you understand that up front, then you can start thinking about what survival kit is going to work for me. Now, the other thing is a couple things I don't recommend. At every thing I teach on fire making, at some point somebody will raise their hand and say, have you ever tried dryer lint? It works really well. I have to say, yes, I have tried dryer lint. I've tried dryer lint extensively as a fire making tinder, and I don't carry it, and I recommend you don't either. And the bottom line on this is some dryer lint will burn very well, and some dryer lint won't. Some dryer lint won't ignite. And unless you have tried it of the particular batch that you're taking with you, if you have just said, I'm going to take dryer lint and that's it, you could end up in a world of hurt. Because if you have dryer lint that came from a load of cotton towels and cotton sheets and all that stuff, it might ignite very well. If you get a load of fleece, wool, and a bunch of synthetics, it may not light at all. And these are things that anybody can figure out. All you have to do is say, if I'm going to start a fire and use dryer lint, then I should try it first. And try it at home, in your backyard or in your garage. But don't go out somewhere with a survival kit with the idea of, oh, well, because Leon said, this is what Leon carries, and this is what Leon recommends, then I'll just take it and I'll be fine. And you may not be if you haven't practiced with the kit and you don't have, you haven't practiced to use some of the tools in the kits. So you've got to be very careful.
Well, okay, I got a question. This is more, it could go either, it could go anywhere you want, in dry weather, rainy weather, snowy weather. What kind of, to our audience that don't are just beginning and are not aware of certain things, what kind of a lighter or matches would you recommend?
Well, I don't carry matches, and there's a lot of good reasons for that, and primarily it's because I've had them fail so many times. If you are going to carry matches, and again, this is one of those, if you must carry matches, get something good like the REI Stormproof matches or something like that. The matches that you get, like your Strike Anywhere matches, they don't necessarily work everywhere. Matches in general will deteriorate over time, and you're not going to have, say if you have some matches that you didn't check since last year, they may not light at all. Now, the other thing is, do I carry a lighter? And I did a whole story on different ignition methods, and I wish folks would read that, because what I did was I had a volunteer help me, and we sat down with every practical method we could think of to see which of these actually works for the best fire ignition. And what we found out was there is no best method. There is no single method that's going to work for you, so you have to have several that will work. And so what I would recommend and what I use is about four different types. Now, I use the old flint and steel method that the pioneers did, and I use that with char cloth I make, and I have practiced with it, and I have, I haven't started a fire out in the woods or the wilderness anywhere for about 10 years with a match or any new method. I use the primitive methods just to keep my skills going. But I don't recommend that for people who don't know how to use it. And it would be foolish for you to buy a flint and steel on, my recommendation and never practice with it and then just say, well, I'll just take this along because Leon said it would work. And I guess he knows something because look at all these posts he's got. That's very dangerous. And the other thing is that I carry a butane lighter in my the standard Bic mini lighter. I carry one in my pants pocket, one in my coat, and one in my pack. And I don't trust them, but I carry them, and here's why. If you get into a very cold situation, which is very frequent here in Central Oregon, butane is not going to form a gas. It's going to be too cold, and it will stay a liquid. Where you live, Billy Bob, it'd probably be the ideal fire starting method because it's always warm. You have humidity. You're at a low elevation, and your lighter will probably work. But where I live, where the elevation could be anywhere from, my driveway is 3,800 feet, to 8,000 or 9,000 feet, the higher up you go, the less air pressure there is. The less humidity, the less air pressure. When you have that circumstance then, I could take a lighter that worked very nicely in my driveway and then go out hiking in the mountains, and it might not have enough pressure to light. And so you've got to be very concerned about those. Now, I carry them because my plan is if I have an emergency situation develop, I'm going to have a Bic lighter somewhere on me, and I can light it with one hand. I can, if one wears out, which is improbable, I'll have another. And I have a reasonably reliable fire making method. But the method that I would recommend for everybody, and the one I carry and the one that I sell on my website, is cotton balls, Vaseline, and a what they call a magnesium stick or flint stick or something, a striker like that. And the beauty of the cotton balls and Vaseline is that you can use them for a lot of stuff. If you are hiking and you start feeling a hot spot on your heel or something like that, you whip out your fire starter, rub that on your hot spot. It may help. And I've done that. And the other thing is that you can use your cotton balls and Vaseline probably if you have to improvise some sort of a dressing over some sort of a scrape or something like that. And also, the cotton balls and Vaseline are essentially almost waterproof, depending on how much Vaseline you have on there. So I would recommend lighting those with a magnesium stick. And there's an interesting little video I did a couple weeks ago about this, and you can actually watch this stuff burning on top of snow and during a snowstorm, during a snow and sleet storm. So it's the method I would stake my life on. That's what I carry. I carry a butane lighter, magnesium stick. I carry some of those stormproof matches with me just in case I'm the one who needs to be rescued and someone goes through my pack and says, well, I don't know what any of this stuff is, but I know what a match is and I can light it. And then a flint and steel. So I carry four methods.
Okay, well, that is great. That's some wonderful information. And I was thinking along the line there, whatever happened to the good old-fashioned lighter fluid type lighter? Are they just not available anymore?
You can get a Zippo lighter, and I did some pretty extensive testing on those as part of this whole fire-making thing. And I sat down one day, and I think it's probably some indication of my social life, but I was wondering, how many lights can I get off of a fully hydrated Zippo lighter? Want to take a guess?
Yeah, 125.
You got to go better than that. Sharon, you have one?
Well, if it got to go better than that, 200?
972.
Wow.
I never knew it that many.
Well, here's the problem, though. I had a blister on my thumb by the time I was done. I kept going, come on, just quit so I can quit doing this. Now, there is a value to the Zippo lighters, but here's the problem with them. Where I live, here in the desert, those things will dry out in 2 days because I've had them along testing them. I sealed one with a piece of duct tape one time to see if it was because of the fuel just evaporating, you know, out of the little lid and everything, and it's still dried out. And it's another one of those types of tools that, yeah, it has its place because if you have, you know, Zippo will work on gasoline. And if you have a power boat or something like that, and you got your Zippo and you have 5 gallons of gas, well, you know, it'll light forever unless your flint or your wheel wears out. But you have to know what all the liabilities of all these methods are, because what I have found is I can't find one that doesn't have some sort of built-in problem with it. That's why I carry four different types.
Now, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that makes sense, too.
It's common sense survival, folks.
Right. Okay, I got a question that we can probably take a little bit of time to talk about, because it's something that really fascinates me about what you do, and I think that our listeners would really be interested in it. You mentioned earlier in the show how there's just certain things you keep on your person at all times. And
yes,
one of those has to do, I think, with what you carry on your keychain, and the other fits in a box the size of an Altoids mint container, right?
Absolutely. And
Go for it.
Oh, go for it. Okay.
Tell us about it.
Let me give you a little background here first. One of the reasons I got into the common sense survival was because, as a journalist, I've covered a lot of bad situations where people were in a bad situation. And in 2006, there were two folks died about 50 miles from where I live in the wilderness. The tragedy was that they were unprepared and they didn't have stuff with them. At that point, my boss at the paper said, okay, Leon, we want you to write a survival guide for Central Oregon. And I said, well, you know, come on. Survival guides are a dime a dozen. Everybody's got one. Just pick one. And, you know, there you go. And he said, no, what I want you to do, because you are an investigative reporter, is come up with a kit that works for Central Oregon. Give us what you would have to have to survive out here in the wilderness. So it took me about 9 months to write the guide, but among the things I was testing were why aren't people not carrying survival kits? It didn't make sense to me. I've always had them on me. And one of the things Search and Rescue told me, and one of the big problems people have, is they underestimate the situation. They look out over the beautiful Three Sisters Wilderness from where, you know, my window. I'm looking at it right now. Because it's so close, they say, well, gosh, it's kind of like Disneyland. Let's just go take a walk. And they don't realize there's a danger. Now, the other problem is they don't have survival gear, or if they do, it's inefficient, or if they do have efficient survival gear, it's too big, and they're not going to carry it. And you know as well as I do that if cell phones weighed 5 pounds apiece, none of us would carry them. We would have nothing. So one of the things I started looking at were if I could only have what I have in my pockets, what would it be that I would take along? And I did a whole bunch of research on this because one of the things that concerned me was I'm not really thinking about just wilderness survival. I'm thinking about urban survival. I'm thinking about I'm at the mall, the lights go out, and we're in a darkened theater. How am I going to get out the exit alive? So some of the things I carry, and I'm just going to go on my key ring to start with because that's the one that's been very popular, and they've been selling quite well. I guess people are seeing that they need something like that. But on the key ring, it has to be small. It can't be this huge key ring, you know, that weighs a pound and a half, or else, again, it won't get carried. So I researched and practiced on various techniques and stuff till I came up with what I think is as good as I can do, and that is because if it's any bigger, I won't carry it, and you wouldn't either. But on my key ring, I have an LED flashlight, and it's one of those. It took me a long time to find these, but they have an on-off switch, and they don't turn on when you squeeze them. And that's really important because you can inadvertently turn on your light and it'll sit there and burn away and burn away and you won't notice it until it doesn't work. So I always have a good flashlight on me and they don't need to be big. They're about a little bigger than a quarter, but it gives you enough light. Now, the other thing that's important is your whistle. And I have a little bitty whistle, but it is shrill and obnoxious. And that's what I need. If I get into that crowded theater we're talking about, the lights go out, well, the first thing that happens is people will probably panic because 80% of the people have no clue. And so what you're going to have to do is get out of there. So you'll take your flashlight. As soon as you turn on a flashlight, you are the leader because in a darkened theater, anybody who can see something apparently knows something that the rest of us don't. So you're going to have a lighter, or not a lighter, you're going to have a flashlight. You also need some way to keep things from getting really panicky. So you'd blow your whistle very loudly, take your flashlight, and say, everybody, quit panicking, follow me, and then lead them out the exit. So those were two tools and a technique, I thought, that had to be included in this whole key ring thing. And if you only carry two tools, folks, get that flashlight and get the whistle because you may need them. Now, the other thing on there is a nail clipper. And people have said, well, you've got a knife on there. Why do I need a nail clipper? And the point would have to be, in any survival situation, you will be doing a lot with your hands. And if you tear a fingernail and can't trim it off, or your toenail gets too long and starts rubbing against your boot or something like that, you have to be able to trim those off accurately. And I don't know about you, but I have a real problem taking a fingernail and a Bowie knife and saying, I guess it's time to trim off my fingernails.
Man,
but it doesn't make sense. So that's why I carry that. And then the final thing on the key ring is a Swiss Army Classic knife. And that's that little bitty knife that, you know, it's not big at all. It has a 1.5-inch blade. And what I always tell people is, you'll buy one and say, what am I going to use this for? And then a week later, you'll say, how did I get along without it? Because it will do about 80% of what a pocket knife needs to do. And when you have it, you also have a scissors, a little bitty blade. It's about 1.5 inches. That'll cut string and open mail and all sorts of good stuff like that. And then you'll have the world's best tweezers. And these tweezers are reason enough to carry that because if you get a splinter in your finger or one of your kids do, you have a problem, especially if you can't wash your hands and it's you know, you don't want to give your finger a chance or your foot or whatever. You don't want to give it a chance to get infected. So those are, that is on my belt all the time. It's on my belt right now. In my wallet, then, I carry three things, and one of them is the wallet-sized survival fire lighter. And I came up with this idea several years ago when, again, I was covering a disaster. I was in the newsroom, and these snowmobilers had gotten lost and had taken no equipment with them whatsoever. So in desperation, they started emptying the contents of their wallet to try to make a fire. And the running joke was, gee, I bet they know exactly how much this fire cost to build, because they were burning money, the title to the snowmobiles, credit cards, and they still didn't get a fire started. So I came up with this concept of a wallet-sized fire starter that I carry with me all the time. I also carry char cloth. And you buckskinners out there, or you historical reenactors, will know what char cloth is. But essentially, it's a piece of cloth that has been cooked, much like charcoal that we barbecue with is. It won't burn, but it will catch a spark, and it will glow, and it will become an ember. And this creates, gives you a source of heat, so you should be able to blow it into a flame if you have the right tinder and such. And again, this is one of those things that, you know, you need to have the good stuff, and you need to know the techniques. And then I made a mirror for myself out of, I went to an auto shop or something like that. I don't remember where I got it, but it's just a piece of this mirror replacement, and it's you can buy an 8x10 sheet for about, oh, I don't know, $10 or something like that. And I cut a bunch of little mirrors out, and I made them exactly the size that would fit in my wallet in the credit card department. So in my wallet, I have char cloth, fire starter, and a signal mirror. On my belt, then, I have the tools I need, the magnesium stick to start the fire. I have a light, and I have a whistle. And then I have, you know, so between those two, I'm already way ahead of the game, because I can at least get a fire, signal for help, and be able to, you know, see my way around in the dark. Now, the other things I carry, I don't smoke, but I mentioned that I carry a lighter, and I carry one all the time. And what I also carry on it is I wrap it with about a foot and a half, 2 feet or whatever, of duct tape. So duct tape is a wonderful fire starter, and it's also one of the most useful things you can carry. So with just those items in my pockets, then, I'm in pretty good shape. I always also carry a cotton handkerchief, because you never know when you're going to have to wipe your nose or something. And with these tools on me, I feel pretty safe as far as, you know, what's going to happen next. I will have the tools with me. Now, we haven't even talked about the pocket tin survival kit, and I also have one of those in my pocket. So anyway, that's stuff I carry with me all the time, and it's because it's so lightweight and because it's so easy to carry, it's easy to take with you.
Well, that sounds pretty good. Hey, can you send us one of these keychains and all with the knives? Oh, I like it. Send me the quarter one too, will you?
Send you what?
And send me the quarter you got in the picture with it.
Well, for only 25 cents more, you can have that, yeah.
There you go. Billy Bob just met his match.
Well, but on the other hand, now, as retail goes, I'd have to double the price. So I can sell you a quarter for 50 cents, Billy Bob. So I'm sorry, that's how it goes. But, yes.
Well, I thought you'd be nice enough to send us something like that, a souvenir.
He will, yeah. He already told you he will.
Oh, I'll send something. You bet.
For a cost, right?
Well,
hey,
for a slight handling fee, yes.
Okay. Zero handling fee, right?
Billy Bob!
You know,
I'm crying over here. Hey, but I got an important question I want to ask you.
Yeah, we've got a couple of minutes left here.
And this is a simple one and all. You know, you talk about out in the woods and everything, and people getting lost and all, and something you carry and all like this. But one thing I found out, that my father loved to go camping and walking out. He told me one major thing to carry with you is a compass.
Yes, absolutely. And
so,
I didn't talk about the Altoids tin kit because I don't want this to come across as blatant commercialism, but there is a compass in the Altoids tin kit, and it's a little bitty one. It's a 14 centimeters, so it's not very big at all. But what I have found is, and the purpose of it being there is to be a backup, because I hope that if you're taking this kit out in the woods, you have the full 10 essentials kit, and you're taking all the good stuff. But frequently what will happen is if you are in an area that you're unfamiliar with and it's pitch dark, you just have to kind of have an idea which way is north or something, you know, which way is anyway. And you can get that with some of these little compasses. They're strictly a backup, and, you know, it's the type of thing you would use under a dire emergency, but you would not want to be without one.
Well, you know, we could go on talking for another hour really easy. It's actually, it's always great talking with you, Leon, because you and I have chatted before.
Yes, we have.
Yes, before you go, just quickly tell people how they can get a hold of you. Give us your website. Mm-hmm. Give us, if you want to leave a contact email address or whatever, go ahead and give it to us.
You bet. Okay, my website is called survivalcommonsense.com, and you can get a hold of me just by typing that in. You can also get a hold of my store at shop.survivalcommonsense.com, and you can find the pocket tin survival kit. You can find the fire starter. And a variety of things that, again, this is all stuff I came up with, or I wouldn't say I designed it. I'm not sure there are any new ideas, but it's the type of thing that I carry with me. And, for example, the survival tin kits, I worked on those for a long time, and I have been reinventing them as I go along, and they've been evolving and such. So it's not something that somebody made overseas. It's something I make in my garage. My daughter helps me. She's going to put herself through college, I hope, with this.
Yeah.
And but it's the type of thing that I would take any of my kits and I would take any of the gear off my website and I would risk my life, or I would stake my life on it, because I have. And that's what I carry. So that's probably the highest recommendation I can give for myself.
Well, you have really given us a lot of valuable information today. I know you said this before. I just want to emphasize it, that you may not necessarily have to be planning a wilderness trip to need these things. All you could be doing is, say, driving 50 miles to your relative's place, and you may wind up off the road in the woods somewhere. The unexpected can happen at any time. So these survival tips aren't just for a wilderness. We could be in a survival situation in the next 10 minutes because...
Absolutely. And I'd also like to tell folks, you know, don't let this intimidate you, the whole idea of getting prepared. Everybody started from somewhere. And if you're starting by listening to this show, then you are doing really well, because you've done all right. Anyway, look on my website, and I can give you some good information on how to make some simple things for free.
Thank you very much, Leon. Hopefully we can have you back sometime. We have to let you go now, but it has been great.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And we're out of here now, folks. It's the end of the show. But just remember, it's never too late to prepare for freedom.